Okay, this is recorded, it's not live, so it's fine. So, Masha, how are you?
Good.
Nice to see you again.
Thank you. Yeah, great to see you again. Return safe and sound and alive. Yeah.
Yes.
Still smiling. Good.
Smiling more. And maybe not, sometimes not for the best reasons, but all situations has two sides. Anyway, we can have a chat about this later, Masha. I just want to, for example, very briefly, because I'm going to put this interview in context with the previous interview you've done with John Mark Dugan, which is still uploaded by someone on YouTube.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take a little bit of that just to put this one in context. I don't want to repeat. It's not needed to repeat ipsis verbis, all the words that you've said there. So we take it from there. Of course, some things... some ideas might be, of course, alike, common, this is normal. But can you just briefly explain?
Because it's not only true for myself, it's true for millions of people in Russia who are horrified by this war. We all have ties with Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Either it's blood ties because it's family members, or it's friends, or it's both. It's inseparable.
Mm-hmm.
We are the same people. Probably if someone from Ukraine heard that now, they would be denying that as vehemently as they could, but we are the same people, actually. We grew up on the same movies, on the same music, on the same literature.
Mm-hmm.
We like the same food. We have the same cultural references. We truly are as close as nations as it can only possibly be.
Okay.
The war with Ukraine is the most horrific thing that could possibly happen.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly do not have a vocabulary to describe that because it just shouldn't exist. So those words don't exist in my language or in English language or in any language, I believe, because it's just beyond horrors to imagine that we could go with war to Ukraine. From, as we say in Russian, every iron, every day we hear how this war, how this horrors, how this aggression is unmotivated, how Russia went insane, how Ukraine is suffering, how it's absolutely undeserved, unprovoked, unreasonable, and how there is no forgiveness to anyone who is Russian, how we all, 150 million of us, supported what horrible people we are, all of that. Well, you know.
Yeah, of course.
I think everybody knows that. I don't have exact numbers. I don't think anyone has, but according to different evaluations from like, and they vary from 200,000 to 2 million people fled Russia since the beginning of the war. And I refuse to call it special operation. It is war.
Okay.
You know? They fled Russia.
But can you just briefly explain what do you do and who are you in this in Russia?
Well,
for our viewers to get to know you a little bit.
I'm a translator, and as a translator, at one point in life, somehow through a common acquaintance, I met John Mark Dugan, and he is an American journalist living in Moscow. Not that he was a journalist from the start, but he kind of qualified into a journalist with the development of the situation. Later on, through him, I met Mike Jones, who is also a journalist, who had to become a journalist just to fill the void, because people in the West need information, and there are too few of too few of people who actually supply the truthful information. So the more, the better. And at one point, that American journalist John McDougan invited me to go with him to basically all the areas of Donbass. It was more than a year ago. It was August 2022. And to me, that was an absolutely life-changing trip, absolutely eye-opening trip. And since then, like I told you, it's like heroin. It's addictive so much. I couldn't stop. I had to come back again and again and again. So now it's been 16 times that I went to Donbass, and actually after we finish this, I'm taking my train there again. So it's going to be the 17th time that I go there.
The 17th?
Yes, 17th time. And what I do is I try to bring help to people there, be it civilians or be it military, and I try to bring back their stories, to record their stories, to help both John and Mike with the interviews that they conduct there, with translations. So it's constant thing.
Constant back and forth.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's pretty much it.
Okay, but there is one particular detail that we go briefly only, mm-hmm. is that you. When I met you, I mean not personally but on YouTube, I was aware that you were anti-Russian. You had an anti-Russian stance.
Yes, I see your point. The thing is, and I try to explain it. It's not being anti-Russian. It's like
this was actually your words.
I saw the scale of lies that I believed. I saw the amount of lies that I thought. You see, when you think that you know, you don't doubt because you already think that you know, mm-hmm. and that you have no reasons to doubt. But it's not out of being anti-Russian or something. It's more like I can compare it with a family. Imagine you have a very close relative, a mother or a father, maybe, or aunt or uncle or grandma or grandfather who has dementia. And the person may do horrendous things, and it might be absolutely impossible to coexist with him. And he may do things that you would actually hate. It doesn't mean you don't love this person. No, mm-hmm. you love this person.
Mm-hmm.
Just he is in the condition that you hate. But the person itself, you love. I would like to emphasize that. My mm-hmm. condition was so bad that I was like, I'll do whatever. And I remember shouting at John, like, you prove me that I'm wrong. I want to be wrong, but I'm right. I know.
Right.
Right. But I welcome you to, I challenge you to try to prove to mm-hmm. me that I am wrong, because with all my heart, I want to be wrong. And I was super depressed. I was just staying at home, not going anywhere. God bless Samarkand and other delivery services. I didn't have to go outside of the house at all. And I went without any hesitation, being absolutely sure that I will find proof of what I already knew. And what I found was
confirm your bias.
Exactly. But what I found was an absolutely opposite thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to, I cannot say thousands of people, but I can say hundreds of people. Probably by now closer to thousands. But back on this first trip, I would just talk to absolutely everyone I saw. And the good thing was that they did not perceive me as any official or anyone with who would talk to them from the position of power.
Yeah,
like, if you tell me the wrong thing, I can do something to cause you trouble.
Yes.
No, I was talking to them as equal.
And they opened to you.
I was talking to them as like, please mm-hmm. help me understand what happened here. Did we do this to you?
Mm-hmm.
No. What do you mean we didn't? No, it's Ukraine did this to us. How do you know? We know from where the rockets are flying.
Okay.
It's very easy to understand.
Yes, yes.
But why would they do this to you? And then, like, well, and then it's like a snowball that gets bigger and bigger and bigger, you know? I look now at sometimes somebody asks me about this first interviews. Mm-hmm. One was given to John.
Yes.
The one you're referring
yes.
to. And another one was a Russian one to a very famous Russian person. She has her own channel. She has her own TV show. She's a daughter of absolutely super famous Soviet actress and director.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's a star. When she approached me, I almost fainted. Like, seriously? You? Really? Okay.
Well.
And we did the interview, and I watched it again with someone who saw it for the first time recently. I'm like, oh my God, I should have said it differently. I should have explained it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I know so much more. I have discovered so much more. I have so much more to say, and I have so much more to explain.
Mm-hmm.
And my whole picture, it's not like, oh, it's now very whole
mm-hmm.
and way more understandable in my head. So what I want to say is, guys, the scale of lies about this conflict in the Western media, in the mainstream media,
mm-hmm.
is cosmic. It's enormous. The only truth in this reports are that it involves Russia and Ukraine.
Yes.
That's pretty much it.
That's pretty much it.
Everything else is a lie.
And maybe the technicalities of the weapons used.
Yeah, but still they claim that they're not used against, that they're only used for military targets by Ukraine. And it's absolutely not true. Like,
now,
you have just discovered
now,
yes. your own, with your own experience, but like you saw with your own eyes,
yes.
there is nothing military there in the objects that Ukraine shoots at.
Это правда.
Yeah.
This is true. And but since this when I saw you this interview you had with John Mark Dugan, and we went through what you are saying now with great detail, but this interview is like over a year ago now.
Yeah.
So you had time to mature your then new ideas to now and trying to be a little bit of the playing the devil's advocate here.
Mm-hmm.
Have you like went through like that those thoughts again, and maybe the doubts came back by any mean, or you know, because I ask this because I have also convictions and I doubt my convictions every day. And
no, what came to me is every time more and more respect and admiration to the people who live there. Because for me, I find it super difficult at times to suppress my anger and to try to stop myself from hating everybody.
Yes.
Because I have to remind myself that, yes, there are crazy people who support fascism
mm-hmm.
and who do it out of their own will,
mm-hmm.
but they're also normal people. Who don't want to do it, who were caught in the street,
yes.
forced to go to the army,
yes.
who had to choose between the prison and the army.
You refer to the Ukrainians?
Yes, and that now I have talked to several POWs, again, not from a position of power
mm-hmm.
by any means,
mm-hmm.
and I just said to me, you can tell me I hate you, it's okay. You can, and it's your right.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to know the real thing. Just
okay.
tell me the real thing. And they say, I don't hate. I never wanted to fight. I have relatives and friends in Russia. And
yes.
I never wanted to do it. I was returning from my dacha. I was stopped at the block post and was given the summons. And what was I supposed to do?
Just to clear a little bit to the Portuguese audience. Sometimes there can be some things lost in translation. So the summons that Masha is referring to is the way that a lot of people on the Ukrainian side are forcefully drafted
yes.
in the army. So they can just be stopped anywhere and given this summons, which
yes.
is mean a document that obliges them to then go to the recruitment office. Sometimes they get dragged there by force.
Very often, by the way,
and have to join the army, and this is this is actually I've known about these testimonies, and I came to Russia to see this by myself because sometimes being in the West, I start doubting, because
when the lie is repeated many times, people start to believe it.
Is it Russian propaganda? Can it be that I'm not seeing the right picture? So I start to prepare my stuff very well in secret, because even yesterday, and I can say this now, just sharing with you, when my wife called me and she was with the friends and they asked, what is wrong? He hasn't been around. These are close friends, so she told them, he's in Russia. But please keep it quiet. The official version is in Turkey.
Okay.
In Turkey. So, and the reply from these friends is that, oh no, I would keep it quiet. Yeah, I would do that as well.
Yeah.
So you see the taboo, even just, and I'm not even referring to Donbas or anywhere near the front lines, just Russia in general. It's demonized. So,
yeah, I hope now this will change a little bit because.
Change me a lot, not
because,
just a little bit.
Regarding demonization of Russia, because anyone with at least a little bit of a brain and memory can compare what is going on between Israel and Palestine and how it looks like when you have a real war against the people and compare it with how Russia is fighting.
Yes, yes.
And see the 10 differences, as we call it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, really.
When we... When you were like an activist and you thought that Russia was in the wrong side, you had some problem with the authorities, like you were detained and at the...
I wasn't detained. I ran away. You see, it's
I want to go through this because this is also...
Okay, when the war just... A special military operation, but it's a war. Okay.
It's a war.
It may be started as a special military operation, but special military operation was supposed to last just a few days and be done.
Yeah.
It's turned into a real war, and what's going on now, I mean, you can pick your wordings and coordinate your dictionaries, but look at what is going on, look at what war is, and try to find 10 differences here. You won't. It's war.
Yeah.
So when it started, I was in big shock.
Let me just stop. For people who think it is forbidden to say it is a war,
it's not.
In Russia, it's not forbidden.
It's not. You're
sitting here at the cafe doing it publicly.
Yeah.
Please go on.
So I was in a very big shock, just like millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, the Russian mentality, and it's so deep in all of us. Our main, probably strongest emotion regarding whatever is pity. We pity everyone. So when we see some injustice, we act upon it because the injustice is inflicted onto someone who is smaller and can't defend themselves.
Yes.
This is what I saw. I saw Ukraine as something
weak. And
imagine that's Russia.
Yeah.
And that's little Ukraine.
Pull a little bit more up. Yeah,
yeah.
Like that.
Little
yeah.
Ukraine and big Russia.
Yeah.
And big Russia attacks little Ukraine for no reason.
Reasons.
Poor little white and fluffy Ukraine. How could it be? No fascism. How can be there fascism? Because Zelensky is a Jew and all these stories like no. It's all propaganda that they're saying. This all exaggeration cannot be happening. It's just Russia going dementia, like having this, like your relatives that I started to talk about in the beginning, went insane, I don't know, developed dementia or something and went mad and
want to conquer the world.
Attacked poor little white and fluffy
by no
neighbor
reason,
for no reason whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
So I was crying for my country. I went there and I started to cry for Ukraine because I realized the horror.
Mm-hmm.
And the degree of the perversion that Ukraine has developed into.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do not act like this. People don't act like this towards anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Not just towards people, but towards animals, towards anyone. People do not do this. If you're human, you will not do this. What you are doing is an absolute abomination of everything. And it's beyond the border of good and evil. It's something else. And they're doing it on a global, federal, national scale.
Yes.
And this has to stop.
Yes.
Another analogy that I often use is this. like it's within Donbas, Ukraine, it's all their territory, what are you doing there? That's a very common argument.
Yes.
So, and as Russian, we are being blamed for our imperialistic mindset and stuff. So I'll talk to you from the imperialistic mindset. Okay, I am Mother Russia. I have a couple of kids in their kids' room. Mm-hmm. Imagine you are a parent, you have two kids, and one of your kids at some point comes to you and you see that he's all covered with scratches. Like, what happened to you? Well, my brother hurt me with the scissors, so I have all the skin. Okay. Next day, he has a bruise. Next day, he has no ear. What? My brother cut it off. So at what point will you think that maybe taking this crazy brother who went insane to psychologist or even to psychiatrist and believing his promises that nothing's going to happen again, I'm good, I will not do it again, is not working. At what point will you actually think to yourself, no, it's not something that's going on in the kids' room. It is actually my business. And I can't let this happen because this other child is going to be killed or it's going to be maimed for life or first maimed and then killed. I mean, when exactly are you going to realize that talking is not helping and you have to somehow physically try to stop that crazy one, physically neutralize him somehow from doing what he's doing because he's not going to stop himself. And what do you do this?
You have to intervene. You have to intervene.
So the answer to the question what Russia is doing there, Russia is saving lives there.
Yes.
Another thing that I want to say, I have been to a closed city of Lysychansk. It's very difficult to get there. The Lysychansk is the city on the other shore from which is Severodonetsk.
Severodonetsk.
Severodonetsk was as destroyed as Mariupol. I could never get to Lysychansk. Impossible. And finally, we managed. I brought lots of humanitarian aid to the unit that was deployed in the area. And to get to them, I had to go through Lysychansk. So they allowed it. These people from this unit came to me, picked me up, and like, she's with us. Definitely 100%, we swear she's with us. So, and they specifically drove me through all the streets. It's not a big town, okay?
Yeah.
All the streets of Lysychansk, all of them. Okay, Severodonetsk was shelled and destroyed by Ukrainian military, and every person in Severodonetsk could confirm it for you if you ask. Lysychansk was occupied by Ukrainian military. It's a little bit higher on the ground. It's way more convenient to shoot from there into Severodonetsk, which is what they did. So the Ukrainian military was to be removed from Lysychansk in order to free Severodonetsk. Just a little bit of explanation, okay?
Yes,
Severodonetsk is all destroyed. Lysychansk, even windows are intact. And I'm talking Soviet old windows, not the new plastic one replaced.
Yes.
Like they are replacing them now.
But Lysychansk was occupied by Ukraine, but then taken by Russia.
Yes, and when Russians got them out, drove them out of Lysychansk, they did not destroy civil population.
Okay.
They did not destroy civilian infrastructure. They did not destroy their houses.
Mm-hmm.
Even the windows in the houses are intact. Glass did not break. That that kind of jewelry work on removing them from there, you know?
It and perhaps at the cost of many lives on the Russian side.
Yes. Russia fights in these white gloves, for real, trying to spend. It's like somebody said, you spend $3 billion in order to save several, or rather not kill several lives. Yes, we do. This is what we do. And even doing that, from all the conversations that I had with the different layers of military, right? It could be privates, it could be surgeons, it could be like really high up position people. Nobody wants to do it. In Russia, we do see Ukrainians as our brother nation, as our brothers, really. We don't want to kill them. And we totally understand that the reason why it's happening is because we have no choice. It's you're gonna be killed if you don't answer. So the fire that is aimed at you, this is what is happening. And at every moment, and it kept being said all the time, stop. It's in your hands, stop. The moment you stop, you stop all these killings.
But
you stop all this violence, just stop. But Ukrainians have to stop.
They
don't, well, maybe they would, but they're not allowed to. They're forced to continue.
They're forced to continue.
But still, it's still millions of them. Versus how big is the group that forces them to continue?
Yes.
Seriously?
Yes, that's...
Mm-hmm. It's the only way for them to save their lives. Because it's, I mean, look at the whole history. It's pretty pointless to fight with Russia. You won't win
yes.
over Russia.
Yes. Yes.
And it's not like I'm welcoming you to challenge us, but just don't, because we don't want to kill anybody.
Yes.
But don't try. Because yes. we will, because we'll have to.
But the, don't you think, the, for example, what puzzles me the most is that Ukraine, and for example, I've been in Donetsk, which is former Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
but those people were living in Ukraine for,
yes.
like, since Ukraine was created, right?
Yes.
And so I don't see, and I don't, we do not cross the border, I mean the oblast border, and go into Donetsk and see people of different than I saw here in central Russia.
Yeah, you won't it's, find any difference because there is none.
There is none. So it seems to me that it's a brotherly
Absolutely.
Fight.
Yeah.
And this is what's strange, because in the West, most of people are very convinced. And today, one person asked me on Facebook. He asked me, so if you're condemning the killing in Gaza, why wouldn't you condemn the Russia because they want to wipe out the Ukrainians out of the earth?
No, we don't.
Yes, I know this, but you see this, you get these arguments from people that I even consider that they have a developed brain.
Look,
but
if you look.
Of course, of course. So while Masha searches the phone, although we are not live, I will not leave the camera recording without any yapping going on. And yeah, this interview that I'm doing now is much different from standing in my little studio in Portugal, because now I've just been back there in Donetsk, and and it's a very strong drug, because I was immediately addicted. And so, and to prove that, I opened my bank account in Russia, just to be sure that when I'm back, I have some money stashed here, safe. And I want to develop more knowledge about this, deeper knowledge about this, following the example of Masha and Mike, and of course, following the example of my friend Russell, who hosted my presence in Donetsk. He lives there. He rolls the dice every day. He's been rolling the dice every day for almost 10 years now. We had some near arrivals when we were there. Arrivals, this was a rather strange word for me in the beginning. Arrival, it's like, is the mail arriving? People arriving? Arrivals are like missiles incoming.
Yes.
Incoming projectiles, hostile projectiles that explode and do... they might do a little hurt if you're lucky and kill you instantly. So yes, this is I probably have to do my own video afterwards, going through my thoughts of all the experience I've been having here, because from Moscow to Donetsk has been an experience that was, I mean, it surpassed my expectations by far. And if you ask me, okay, of all Russia, which do you like more, where would you stay more time, would you come back to? Well, Donetsk, of course. And I actually, I felt quite sad of having to leave there. You ready?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No problem.
So I want to show the file, which I received on November 3rd. So today is November
November 12th? The 12th.
So a little bit earlier, but it doesn't change.
November the 3rd.
Yeah, it doesn't change the picture too much. It says that from February 24, 2022,
yes,
after 563 days of war,
yes,
the amount of civilians killed in Ukraine is 9,614.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine, I want you to remember, these are the civilians killed in Ukraine, including us. For the biggest part, these are the civilians killed by Ukraine, mm-hmm, in Donbass,
yes,
claiming that it's Russian. But this is them.
Okay.
This is the
I can believe this easily now.
Since October 7th, in 25 days, 8,796 civilians killed in Palestine. Just in 25 days. So it's very similar numbers.
The absolute numbers are similar.
Yes,
but the
scale. 25 days and 563 days. Right now, the number in Palestine goes over 10,000.
Yes.
And it's been what, since November 3, 11
yes.
days past,
so it's
9
actual,
days past.
It's actually a bit silly and even dumb to be comparing the two. Like,
yes and no. It gives you the understanding of how Russia fights and how Russia is trying to make sure that civilians stay alive.
Yeah, of course. But what I mean is that when people try to argue, of course they argue in favor of Ukraine, and then try to argue in favor of Israel.
There is no argument.
There is no argument,
exactly. Israel, and there is no argument that you work in favor of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Both are killing the civilians. And another thing that I constantly repeat like a broken record, if you want to fight with the military. If you want to fight terrorism, fight with the terrorists. Leave the civilians
alone.
It's very easy to fight the civilians, they won't answer.
Yes.
You can just kill them all, and that's all.
And claim there are terrorists among them.
Uh-huh. One out of 10,000.
Yes. I remember when the Donbass civilians were being called terrorists as well.
And separatists.
Yeah.
All of it. They faced it. We heard hundreds of stories from Mariupol.
Uh-huh.
How, like, you're not people. You're separatists. You're not humans. You do not deserve to live.
Uh-huh. Do you think if, for example, let's put this example up there. If Ukraine would stop fighting, lay down their arms, raise the white flag, that Russia would like to sweep the country and there would be like this horrible occupation, or what would happen in your opinion if
you've been to Denizov?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen horrible occupation?
No.
Have you seen this horrendous, shamelessly built new roads?
No.
Have you seen this? Oh my God, new parks, new hospitals, new schools. Have you been to Mariupol?
Actually, no.
No? Okay. If you only saw the roads there that are now, Ukraine has never had such roads in 30 years.
Yes.
Now,
the infrastructure.
How dare
but
you, the Russian occupiers, how dare you rebuild
mm-hmm.
our roads? You know what? Do you think we really need this? No, we don't.
Of course.
These are our people. And
yes.
We take care of our people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do. That's how we see it.
Yes.
Like Donbass, welcome home. If war stops now, I honestly don't know. Whatever is decided by this capitulation of Ukraine that has to be signed,
mm-hmm.
whatever borders are accepted,
mm-hmm.
within these accepted borders, we'll continue to do what we're doing now in Donbass.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure about it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to rebuild. We're going to bring roads there. We're going to bring civilization there, because right now it's just whatever managed to survive since Soviet times, because there's zero investment from Ukraine into peace in there.
Yes. You can take a look at Kherson. Well, in Donetsk, I actually saw, of course, not even in the places actually quite near the front line, there were roads being built and new.
Yeah. And new hospitals as well.
And they rebuilt.
Maternity center.
Beautiful.
They're rebuilding churches. They're rebuilding
mm-hmm.
roads in Makeyevka as well. And even in Yesinovate, which is constantly under shelling. There's
mm-hmm.
each time you go on a new piece of road that you go through.
Yes.
You know, you see it each time.
Yes.
And the same in LPR. Same in Zaporozhye. You know, it's just what we do.
Okay.
We bring life.
So the so-called occupied territories, I have this doubt, and but I'm sure I'm nearly confirmation. I still have to come back, be sure.
You know, it's not occupied, it's liberated.
Yes.
It's a matter of dictionary again. Yes. You can call it occupied, but no, it was occupied by Ukraine, and now it's liberated by us.
Yes, I can confirm this. I have seen no hatred. I've seen no, like, people trying to resist against the occupier or anything like that. I've seen the opposite. I've seen convoys of trucks passing with the troops back from the front line and people cheering them.
Yeah.
Zapobyeda.
Yes.
So, yeah,
because
it was...
people want to leave. Yes. People have already seen what it means, Russian occupation.
Yes.
And they want that in their lives. They want to have normal lives, good quality lives, good roads, good water, electricity, working schools, working hospitals, you know, just that everything is normal. And what was in Ukraine was not normal.
No. At all. After the Maidan coup, definitely not. We know this is fueled in most part by the United States. I mean, this, we're not going to go deep into this because of the if you are not at this point yet, and I believe, I mean, it's we have to have other conversation in other room. And thanks a lot, Masha, for giving me your time, because I know that you now are becoming famous person in Russia.
It was never the intention.
I know. I know.
It's the scariest part. You know, the scariest part was to agree to go public. I was can someone else do it?
I would. I really am jealous of the John and Mike, because they found such a very competent translator and dedicated to the cause as well. And well, it's true. I'm a little bit jealous because I still have to work alone. I'm not at that point, at that level yet, that I can
get
my translator.
We'll come back. We'll go. You'll just join, and we'll go.
If you can arrange this, this would be.
Well, I think December. There will be another trip before the end of the year, for sure.
Well, I'm not saying anything. That's because I'm have to work in December.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that. There's also life.
There's also life. Because this was a pleasant interview in the center of Moscow, in Pavlyetskaya Plorshad Square. And it was a pleasure to have you, Masha. A real pleasure. Mm-hmm. It was a real treat to meet you. To meet you and John. Don't forget, we got drunk that night.
Yeah.
And it was fun. It was a fun night. And I hope to be in contact with you.
Sure.
And I must say that this channel, Odd Middle East Podcast, OLP, is not a profit one. All of this comes from my paycheck, from my pocket. I do not have any intention to monetize it. It's not the priority. The priority is to put the work out there. And I've been doing it for over 2 years, so спасибо, Nietzsche.
Obrigada.
Thank you. And we're going to continue. And now in Portuguese, I will just say a sentence. Enquanto houver estrada para andar, a gente vai continuar. Bye-bye.